Today, I interview Corey Estrada, co-founder of the natural toothpaste company Risewell. Corey shares her own personal story with PCOS and navigating the IVF process to conceive. We talk all about toxins and natural toothpaste and how they are not all created equal. I learned so much in this episode, and I can't wait for you to as well. Let's go. Welcome to Healthy as a Mother, the podcast for becoming and being a mother, with your co-hosts, Dr. Leah Gordon and Dr. Morgan McDermott, two naturopathic doctors who get it.
Each week, we teach you how to be the healthiest mother you can be, from fertility and preconception to pregnancy and birth prep, through postpartum and throughout motherhood, empowering you with the natural health guidance and education you're not getting elsewhere, so you can confidently navigate the broken system at large.
The real, the raw, the untalked about. And remember, this information is not intended to diagnose, treat, or manage any disease. Always consult with your doctor before making any changes. Let's take a quick break to hear a word from our sponsors. Do you have your heart set on starting a family and are eagerly preparing to begin trying within the year? Have you been actively trying to conceive for several months? Do you have a burning desire to optimize your chances of conception and avoid the distressing path of infertility? Or have you been navigating infertility for a while, yet you yearn for new solutions, a supportive environment, and an approach that addresses the root causes of infertility? Our current fertility system is broken. Many couples receive almost zero support on optimizing their health and improving their chances of conceiving before or while trying to have a baby. 1 in 7 couples end up trying for over a year and then are often shuttled into the medication or reproductive technologies routes like IVF. Though there is a time and a place for these tools, so many couples would have different outcomes if they had the education, resources, and support I provide in my fertility formula bundle. This program is a bundle of 13 mini courses about everything a couple needs to know. Each mini course consists of invaluable information, as well as exactly what to do step by step, with all of the resources I have created over many years seeing patients in practice. From mastering the cycle to boosting egg and sperm quality, balancing hormones, investigating female and male fertility, nourishing the body, fostering fertility energy, ditching toxins, reducing stress, rebalancing the gut and vaginal microbiomes, and detoxing prior to pregnancy, this bundle has it all. This is the information you aren't getting from your regular doctor that will only improve your chances of conception and the health of your future baby, no matter where you are along your fertility journey. And it costs less than one appointment with me. Visit www.womanhoodwellness.com/fertilityformula and use code HOPE to save 15% off the entire bundle. Again, that's www.womanhoodwellness.com/fertilityformula and use code HOPE to save 15%. Okay, back to the show. Corey Estrada, co-founder of Risewell, is disrupting the oral care industry with an all-natural, sustainable brand that prioritizes safe ingredients and transparency. Driven by personal experiences with celiac disease and the IVF process, Corey's dedication to overall health and wellness led her, along with former partner John Estrada and brother Derek Gada DDS, to create dentist-formulated products that are free from harmful chemicals like fluoride, sulfates, and synthetic additives. Collaborating with leading doctors and dentists, she discovered the power of hydroxyapatite during research in Japan, finding the star ingredient for Risewell's best-selling toothpaste, which has led to a full line of oral healthcare products. With a background in finance and an unwavering commitment to innovation, Corey envisions a future where Risewell transforms the industry and inspires holistic well-being. All right, Corey, thank you for being here. I am just so excited to interview you. And for anyone who doesn't know, tell us a little bit about you and your involvement with Risewell and how that kind of got started. Just kind of give us some background.
Yeah, and thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to chat with you today. So over 6 years ago, I was going through IVF at the time, and I've had something called polycystic ovarian syndrome, PCOS, for a very long time. And I'll jump right into giving too much information, but I've never had a period my whole life. So when I went into the process of thinking about having children, it wasn't a surprise to me that there would have to be some sort of medical intervention to make that happen. So I found out pretty quickly that I'd have to go through the IVF process. And my husband at the time, John, and I, we wanted to do everything to make it a success. And as some know, it's a very expensive and also pretty trying process on the body. And we went into it thinking, we'd like to do this one time, not many times. And we want to do everything possible to have a positive outcome. We were already eating fairly healthy about 10 years prior to that. I found out I have a gluten allergy, which sort of spurred the, I'd say, phase one of me turning around my you know, after being invincible and doing investment banking for many years and figuring out that eventually there were consequences to lifestyle and the way I was eating. So that had been sort of a long journey for me to figure out the food piece of it. We had incorporated that. The next piece that our IVF doctor actually at the time had told us, besides taking the right medications and also making sure we're using products in our everyday life that also would not be harmful to the process, and everything from things like cookware to personal care products, things that I had never really thought about. I was always very concerned with what I'm putting inside of my body and less concerned with everything on the outside world that felt very separate from what was happening internally. So I think the two of us went home after having that appointment with our doctor and went into the bathroom and literally took everything out of the cabinets. And we had this app that we were using that was, you could actually scan the barcode of the products and it would tell you sort of how it was ranked and how dirty or not the product was.
Yeah.
So I think everything we had in our bathroom was not good. So everything
was crazy.
Yeah, we just had really had no idea. And I mean, this is sort of over 6 years ago. So we were actually able to replace most of the things in our bathroom, like shampoo and face creams and deodorants. The one area that we really struggled with was toothpaste. My brother happens to be an incredible prosthodontist. He's based in Florida. He was actually a dentist in the Navy for many years. I called him up and said, what should we do? Or we want to switch to natural toothpaste. And he pretty bluntly told us, just save your money, because natural toothpaste literally doesn't do anything. They take out the fluoride and they don't replace it with any active ingredients. So you're essentially left with a flavored paste. And in some cases, natural toothpaste that doesn't have an active ingredient also has things that you would want to avoid, like foaming agents or, you know, quote unquote, natural flavors that aren't actually natural. And there's a, you know, a long list. So you're actually doing yourself a disservice and not helping your teeth at all by using those. So that was really the light bulb moment for John and I at the time to say, there has to be a better option. You know, is it possible for us to actually create a product that dentists could recommend that works as well as conventional toothpaste, but is also safe enough to eat, because it should. Your gums are highly absorbent. While you're not swallowing toothpaste in most cases, your body is actually absorbing a lot of it. Think sublingual medications. It's actually a very fast way into your bloodstream is by putting pills under your tongue. Your body's actually absorbing that. So, you know, brushing your teeth two times a day, you're actually getting a lot of the ingredients. So that's sort of the abbreviated version of my health story that sort of took us to founding Risewell.
Oh my God, I love that. Wow, that's great. You probably told that many times because you did a great job with that like whole synopsis. That's so interesting because I feel like, yeah, the going into the low-tox or non-toxic product world can feel really overwhelming for people. You know, some people listening are maybe pretty savvy in that. Some are brand new to this concept, especially when we start the fertility journey. I think people just sort of don't think much is wrong. I mean, I see this a lot of times with my patients where people are just kind of going through their life, doing their thing, doing the very average American thing where you buy products at the grocery store. You don't think much about it until there's a problem, right? Mm-hmm. Until something is in your face, whether it's a chronic disease or for a lot of people who are quote unquote healthy, like they wouldn't obviously think there's a problem. It's trying to get pregnant. Mm-hmm. And that can be really shocking. Like for you not having a period, did you always like wonder if getting pregnant was going to be an issue? Was that always on your mind? I'm so curious.
It wasn't, because for, you know, in my 20s, I was very focused on career things and sort of babies weren't top of mind at that point. But I think that looking back, I'm surprised that I ignored something that I didn't understand the importance of hormonal health. I mean, just to be honest.
Yeah.
I think, you know, by the time I was 18, of course, my mom had been sending me to the gynecologist at that point. And I remember when I'd graduated high school and I went and she's like, well, you still haven't gotten your period. And this is a long time ago at this point. And so, you know, not to sort of date myself, but I think that, you know, back then PCOS was, there was very little known about it.
Yeah.
And somebody, I was very athletic. And so my doctor said, well, you're athletic. This happens. Sometimes people don't get their period and we're going to put you on birth control pills. And so when I was 18, I went on birth control pills for 10 years. And, you know, after once we got into the point where I said, you know, I should figure out what's going on. I wonder, maybe I'll just miraculously get my period after I go off of it. So I did go off of it after 10 years, but I had no idea, like, the impact of birth control pills on me. I mean, they were not, looking back on it, I'm like, a lot of health issues that I had were probably attributed to being on birth control pills. It was not something that worked well for my body. But it kind of just seemed like, well, the doctor says to do this, so I guess I should do it. And then I did find a really great gynecologist who, after a few years of being off birth control pills, then diagnosed me with PCOS. And I did have sort of the classic signs of insulin resistance. And my testosterone was high, and my blood sugar levels were sort of pre-diabetic. And I've always been someone that I thought was healthy. But it actually took, after having my first child, so it was successful. I was able to have my son, Leo, and he's a great little kid. And after a few years of really trying to refine the diet piece of it and being like 90% keto, about 2 years ago, I actually got my period for the very first time naturally, which was really cool, which I know for most people, it's like, wait, but don't you not want to have that? Like, for me, I was like, this is the cool, I felt so proud of myself because I was really patient and sort of stuck with it. And so I was able to sort of work itself out. But there was not an overnight fix. Let's put it that way. It took just a lot of patience and trial and error, and eventually something happened. But yeah, I feel as a result, like, now I feel so great. I'm like, man, if only I had known this 20 years ago, maybe things would have been a lot different. But.
Right. It's like screaming from the top of the roof. If I could, it's just, I feel like there's a famous quote that I'll totally butcher and I have no idea who said it, but something about, which maybe you would know it, but, and people listening are probably like, I know what you're talking about and you're not doing a good job, but it's something about, like, the greatest tragedy is along the essence of, like, youth is wasted on the young or something, and that, like, young people have so many opportunities to do better, to be different, to change their health, to solve all of these problems, yet they don't care. And
yes,
the people who care are older, and, you know, not that they're running out of time, but it's just different. And you've now, like, you're trying to not only learn all of this stuff, but undo, you know, decades of what you maybe have been experiencing that weren't the best for your body. And it's just like, how do you get young women to care? Because, you know, and just like with your period, I think there is more awareness now than there has been before. And everyone talks about social media being, you know, whatever it is, there's pros and cons to it. But of the cons, I think there are some pros, and some of those are in educating people in ways that they would never get otherwise from their mothers or their sisters or their aunts or school, around things like how important a period is, that it's a sign of your health. And just like you said, people are like, well, why would you want that? And it's like, oh my gosh, to me, it would be like if someone didn't have a pulse. I mean, it's a huge vital sign of our health. And whether you want to have babies or not, it tells us that something serious is going on if you're not getting your period. And it's just such a shame that our medical system just puts women on birth control and doesn't try to get to the root cause of the problem. Because, you know, the analogy that I use around birth control, when used in that way, you know, not for purely contraception, is it's like there's a fire burning in the building and there's a fire alarm going off, which are the symptoms that someone's experiencing, either lack of period or acne or painful periods or whatever. And they just unplug the fire alarm and they're like, okay, bye. Yeah. You're done.
Yeah.
And it's like that fire is going to keep burning because you never addressed it. And that's the saddest thing that I see, is that then these women who end up wanting children eventually are like, okay, I'm ready. I'm going to get off the pill. They plug the fire alarm back in, and it's like so much worse than it has ever been, because for 10 years it's been burning to the ground. And so that's my beef with birth control. And it sounds like you kind of had a similar experience. So how long from stopping birth control to doing IVF? Like, what was that time frame like?
So that would have been probably about 5 years.
Oh, wow.
And so I sort of gave it a few years to just see what my body was capable of, because I kind of naively thought, well, maybe when I was younger, maybe it was because I was athletic, you know, as sort of my doctor at the time said. And sort of nothing happened. And then I was diagnosed with PCOS sometime in that first sort of 2 years post going off the pill. And at that point, we met with some doctors a few years in, and tried the more simple like IUI and other processes, but it got to the point where like IVF was kind of the only thing that would be possible. Looking back on it, actually, you know, while someone with PCOS tends to have a lot of eggs, and so when you have a lot of eggs, it can be more trying, the IVF process.
But yeah.
It was okay for me. I got like 40 eggs or something crazy. So it was.
Oh my gosh. Good.
Yeah. The nice thing of never ovulating your whole life, the one benefit is that you've got tons of eggs because they've been sitting there and waiting for many, many years.
Oh my gosh.
But I think the challenge is it's sort of twofold. It's number one that sometimes, and this goes back to your comment about the young and sort of not taking advantage of being able to be so healthy. But I think when you are young, you can feel really invincible. And certainly I was guilty of that. But I think, you know, the other issue is sometimes people have to go through it. And this isn't just true in health. There's so many examples where it's like if someone's in sort of emotional or mental distress, like, until they kind of reach rock bottom or experience something to a point where like they can't take it anymore, like that's when change comes. It's not when someone's best friend says to you, hey, you've got a drinking problem, and the person's like, oh, okay, I'm just gonna stop drinking.
It's good like, call.
They need to get a DUI or do something, mm-hmm. like something extreme has to happen for them to realize like there's a problem. So I think that's kind of part of it. It's certainly for me, you know, beginning with the food issues when I had very serious stomach issues. This was when I was in investment banking, working way too much, and was really just kind of crippled and just with stomach pain. And I was very tired all the time, and I had bloodshot eyes, the weirdest sort of things you would never connect to having a gluten allergy. Also, as someone who's half Italian, it seems like impossible. But the doctor who eventually diagnosed it, I went to probably 5 gastroenterologists. I did endoscopies and all of these different things. They couldn't figure out what it was. And again, this is a long time ago, and so gluten allergies were like kind of not a thing. And then finally had sort of one more functional kind of oriented doctor who did blood tests and was like, you definitely have a gluten allergy. And I'm like, no, not possible. That's true. And he's like, just try not eating it for like 2 days. And I did. And by like the second day, it was back to my old self feeling great. And
wow.
I never feel like people are always like, oh, you don't want a croissant or a piece of bread. I'm like, no, I feel really great. And I never want to go back to that point in my life. And so it's really easy to feel motivated when you've got sort of, when you know sort of healthy versus unhealthy. And sadly, I think doctors today, and my day job is actually as an investor, and we've invested in a company called Parsley Health, and they are like, their philosophy is something I'm a huge believer in, and it's hard to find doctors that look at the whole picture. Yeah. If you think of actually, sort of tying it back to Risewell, like when it comes to oral care versus the rest of your body, dentistry was separated from medicine. I still can't make sense of this idea that for some reason the mouth is viewed as a separate entity that like doesn't exist. It's not connected to the rest of your body. And we have this whole other sort of the dental field, and then there's the medical field, and the two of them don't actually work together to figure out the entire picture, which is wild.
Yeah, it is wild. And, you know, I'm a naturopathic doctor, so that is something that is so unique about us. And I love Parsley Health too. And I'm so happy that you're, you know, supporting that mentality and approach of functional medicine. But, you know, I remember when we learned, you know, someone has a chronic gut issue, we can't figure it out. Someone has some chronic systemic issue. We need to look, do they have a history of root canals? Is there some sort of hidden infection that's going on in the mouth? Is, you know, what is the gingivital picture in the mouth can be a, a clue that something else is going on all over the body. And it is such a shame that it's a separated industry because it's such a pivotal clue. It's like your period. I mean, I think everything in medicine sort of separated because endocrinologists who deal with hormones are not gynecologists. They don't know, you know, about the period world and the birth world and all of that that they need to, because hormones are literally intricately connected to that. And so is neurology, and neurology and gut health are intimately connected, and gastroenterology shouldn't be separate from endocrinology. And it's just like, what are we doing? And I think this is why so many people are sick, because the body isn't separated, but our helping industries are. Mm-hmm. And it's, yes, it takes a lot of school. There's a lot of training and understanding to understand the body, but it's not that hard of a concept to understand that everything's connected. And if you just learn how it's all connected, things like gut problems, like what you're going through, it's quite easy to solve. I mean, I've had like NFL patients who have gut issues, who've been to the top doctors all around the country, flown around, and they come to me and it's like, this is so simple.
Yeah.
I don't, like, how did you guys miss this? But it's just not their training. It's just not what they understand. And that's a shame, because I get it. You know, you need specialists in certain circumstances and surgeries and things like that. But there is a key missing piece to the health world, which is this practitioner who sees it as an integrated whole. And I love what you're doing with dental health, because it's such a big part of it that I just don't think people even think about their teeth and their health at all, like, going together, because it's so trained in our society to think it's separate.
Well, it reminds me of sort of like the diabetes example, where it's a lot easier to write a script for something that's a really quick fix. I mean, in my case, sort of PCOS is somewhat an insulin issue. And I was on, sort of prior to doing IVF, metformin for a few years. And actually on metformin, you know, besides sort of all the negative stomach consequences that come from taking it, which are not fun, but I had a perfectly 28-day cycle on metformin. And so, like, that would have been a really, you know, it was after having my son that I was kind of like, I want to do this myself and see if it's possible. And it took me, you know, like, a few years of trying diets and different supplements, and then eventually it happened, but it was a lot more challenging than just taking metformin. And that's true of a lot of things. And I think that's kind of, you have to be pretty motivated to sometimes go that other route that takes a little bit more effort.
Yeah, no, it's such a good point. And that is a hard thing to get people to do unless they have hit rock bottom or they are desperate in that way. And it's just such this conundrum of like, how do we merge the two? But I love what you said about how people do have to kind of do that. And it's so funny. I feel like so much of my life is holding two opposites in both hands at the same time. You know, I'm a natural fertility doctor who had to do IVF. You know, I am a home birth advocate who had to have a C-section hospital. I see like food intolerances, like what you're talking about with a gluten allergy, and also not having severe anxiety around food. Like, how do we hold these two concepts in our minds? And I feel the same about health journeys, in that, you know, when I see a patient or when I see someone who's struggling, it's like my heart just wants to help them. I want to do everything to make it better, to heal them, to help them realize whatever it is that they want. And on the flip side of it, I know from my own experience the value that comes with that struggle. Mm-hmm. And like the soul growth or the lesson that needs to be learned by that person or that couple or whatever. And so it's like, how much do you intervene and how much is this part of their path? And then it brings up all these like existential questions. And it's interesting. It's all so fascinating to me.
Yeah, it is very interesting. I love these topics. And there are some cases where I think that, you know, when it comes to like, if with oral care specifically, and actually, you know, going back to sort of my comment about it being easy to replace a lot of sort of natural products with more conventional ones, or you know, vice versa. And I think in some cases, one needs medical intervention. Like, I'm glad I went through IVF. Like, I've got a lot of great embryos. It's sort of a thing that, you know, the conventional route in that case was a really positive thing for me.
Yeah.
And then there's other cases too, where, you know, I think natural products actually can be enough or better. And I think that's what when we started Rizal, we knew that we couldn't sacrifice the efficacy piece of it, because the challenge is when dentists are, it was important to us that dentists could recommend our products. My brother's a dentist. Like, if he couldn't tell his patients to use this versus a conventional toothpaste, like, we were never going to be in a dental office. And I think with this category, it's, we wouldn't have started the company if we didn't feel confident that we had products that were just as effective or more than conventional products. And so that piece was important. When you have, let's say, replace your natural deodorant, you're never going to find something that stops perspiration. Like,
yeah.
It's just, you know, you kind of have to give up a little bit of the efficacy piece when you're making the switch. In this case, like, the good news is you don't actually have to do that. Like, you can have great oral care and also have a product that actually works with your whole body, which is really important.
Can you speak to that a little bit? Because I didn't even realize that. And it's something, you know, I learned something from everybody I talk to, probably how not the same natural toothpastes are. And when you're talking about that Risewell, you chose a formula that would be just as good as conventional. What does that look like? Because I would say I'm not a dentist. My husband's family is in the dentistry world. And I know just from their training, it's like fluoride is it. Like, that's it. So what has Risewell done to earn the respect or the credibility or the efficacy or whatever to say, okay, this non-fluorinated toothpaste or this healthier toothpaste can do what the conventional ones do? Because I don't know enough and I would love to know.
Yeah, no, it's a great question. And that sort of gets to the core of why we started and how we were able to resonate so well with dentists. And I think, so it actually, this is a funny addition to sort of the founding story, is John and I were actually in Japan. We were there actually on a work trip. We were doing sort of investment stuff in Japan. And everywhere we went at this point, you know, we had sort of this seed planted in our mind that we had this issue. We needed to solve it. We didn't know how. We obviously were sort of investors by background, not really like, you know, my brother was a dentist and obviously leveraging him as well. But we would always go to pharmacies or drugstores to check out what were other countries doing. So we had our translator app, and we're looking at the different products. And in Japan, they're all using this ingredient called hydroxyapatite, which I have no idea what that means. It sounds super unnatural. but we go home and we do some research on it, and we realize that it has this really cool story. But more importantly, it's actually extremely effective and also really safe. So the cool sort of quick story of hydroxyapatite is, about 97% of your enamel is actually made of hydroxyapatite, 70% of your bones. Astronauts were coming back from space, and NASA realized that their enamel was actually weakening by being in space. And so they asked the question, how can we create more of the enamel that your teeth is made out of? Because at that time, it was only found natural. You can find it naturally, obviously, in bones and different sources, but they wanted to figure out how to chemically manufacture it. So they were able to figure out that process of how to chemically manufacture hydroxyapatite. The Japanese in the 70s hear about this, and they're immediately like, we need to put this in our toothpaste.
Wow.
And so they've actually been using it in their toothpaste since the 70s. So we have over 50 years of data that shows that it works just as well or better than fluoride. With zero safety issues, because you can have a whole pile. It's essentially a white powdery substance. If you take shells, for instance, that has hydroxyapatite and ground it up, you could eat a whole pile of it and nothing would happen. Obviously, fluoride, if it was a little pile, that would be completely toxic. It's why conventional toothpaste says call poison control if consumed. And there's a very small percentage of fluoride that's in toothpaste, but if you're, we can get into sort of that later, and I'm sure you have questions on it, but there's fluoride in most people's drinking water and then also in their toothpaste. You're probably consuming too much of it as it is. So being able to find that piece of it was really critical to starting the company, because up until then, if you wanted to switch from conventional toothpaste to natural, you're using something in some cases that not only has all the junk that's in conventional toothpaste, but just no effective ingredient. And so you're left with actually doing harm. And if it was sort of a cleaner natural toothpaste that had no effective ingredient, you were kind of wasting money because it wasn't really doing anything. The toothbrush bristles actually do most of it, the work in that case. That was that missing link that really differentiated us versus all the other natural toothpaste. And frankly, the conventional as well, because for the first time, dentists have something to recommend that is not conventional toothpaste. And there is slowly growing awareness of it. But what my brother, the dentist, will say is that when he went to specialty school to be a prosthodontist, so he's been in school many years, and he said, in all of my years of school, we spent about 3 minutes talking about oral care products. That's it.
Oh my gosh.
So the entire time is mostly spent on, you know, the crux of the, you know, what everything else that's involved with taking care of people's teeth and extraction and this and that and cavities. But very little time is spent on oral care products. And for the most part, you know, the conventional toothpaste companies sponsor a lot of these dental schools. And
right.
So the education is somewhat narrow. And it's true that up until at least a few years ago when we launched, your choice was like fluoride or nothing if you needed extra protection for your teeth.
Right.
Now consumers have another option. And obviously there's nuances that matter, like, you know, making sure you use actually a high enough percentage of hydroxyapatite. Also that you're avoiding some of the other, you know, not so great ingredients that are in toothpaste, because we really, our philosophy was both twofold. Number one, has to be recommended by dentists and effective. That was critical. Number two, we treat it like food, because even though people aren't swallowing it, it's being absorbed into your body. So we have to think about it like food. And that's also important if you have children, for instance, because if my son eats a whole tube of toothpaste, I don't have to call poison control, which is nice. Yeah. It happens. For adults, it's the longer that our toothpaste, and this is true with fluoride, but there's reasons they can't do this, the longer that it has contact with the enamel, the better that it works.
Okay.
And so one can actually take our toothpaste, squeeze it out, and you can put gloves of it on your teeth before you go to bed and just leave it there. If you
wow.
have areas that are on their way to becoming a cavity or more sensitive, put extra toothpaste and go to sleep. Put it in a night guard or a retainer or whatever. I mean, that holds it in there longer. So we can do that. When you have a product that is toxic, you can't tell patients to put globs of it in their teeth right. and leave it there overnight, even though that is actually would be a really great thing to be able to do.
Wow, that's so cool. I'm learning so much. I feel like I didn't realize that there is a difference, right, between what you guys had created. I have heard of hydroxyapatite from a supplemental perspective, actually, as like a calcium option supplement. I had no idea that it was even in your toothpaste. Look at that. And I like use it and I didn't even know. So I'm so happy that you're sharing this, because I feel like a lot of people are going to have their eyes open. I'm a why person. So as soon as I understand a why, I'm like all in. I'm just like, oh, yeah. That's it. I get it. So are there certain ingredients? I mean, I know ingredients are, there's so many numerous things, but are there specific things for someone listening if they are evaluating their own toothpaste that you don't want to have, like you are kind of mentioning? Because I think some people think, oh, if it's a natural product or if it's sold in a natural product store, then it's totally safe. Like there's no problems. But are there some high level ingredients that you're like, oh yeah, no? Because I know that in the supplement world, mm-hmm. you know, I can walk in immediately, look at a bottle and see the form of certain vitamins that they're using and be like, I know that this is not a good product.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know that in the toothpaste world. Are there any like overarching names of like chemicals or not chemicals, but just ingredients that someone would want to look out for and not have?
Let's take a quick break to hear a word from our sponsors.
Did you know that 97% of women in the U.S. take a prenatal supplement, yet 95% plus are still deficient in key nutrients? My favorite prenatal is from a company called Needed, because they dose nutrients at levels to not just meet the bare minimum as most prenatals do. They actually use form of nutrients and dosages that allow mama and baby to thrive. Needed actually approached me years ago and asked me if I could help them design the perfect prenatal, because they knew that the current prenatals available were not actually helping women. We spent over 3 years diving into the research and understanding what practitioners are seeing and what women actually need at this important season before we formulated this amazingly supportive option. It's no wonder over 4,000 practitioners now recommend Needed, something I am very proud of. If you have followed me for a while, you know that prenatals and optimizing nutrients starts long before pregnancy, so no matter where you are along your fertility or motherhood journey, Needed is the brand I recommend. Head to thisisneeded.com and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 20% on your first order.
Again, visit thisisnita.com and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 20%. Okay, back to the show.
Yeah, so I think the, you know, I'll touch briefly on the fluoride piece of it, but for me, I think we're not anti-fluoride as a company. I think fluoride is actually, when applied topically, that being sort of the key difference. So again, in water, it actually serves no purpose at all.
Right.
But when applied topically, it strengthens your teeth. So it's a little bit, the mechanism of action is different than hydroxyapatite. Hydroxyapatite is a crystal, and your teeth are made up of lots of little crystals, and essentially it adds more crystals to your teeth. So hydroxyapatite, the cool benefit is that it can rebuild enamel. Wow. Fluoride doesn't have the ability. It's essentially something that is very, it hardens the existing structure that you have and makes it more tough and more, less resistant to sort of acid wear and tear, which is also beneficial. And that's why I'm not anti-fluoride. I think for some people that have really serious teeth issues, it might be something to consider. But for the vast majority of the population, and keep in mind, toothpaste is not 100% effective at preventing cavities. There's lifestyle, genetics, and then oral care habits. So there's a lot of things that go into whether or not one has healthy teeth. Again, that's the kind of the whole body connection, even if you're sort of think you're doing everything right with your toothpaste. But so fluoride is something that I avoid personally for my family. It's a known neurotoxin. It's an endocrine disruptor. There's other options that work just as well that are completely safe. And so to me, it's worth it to spend more money to get something that kind of helps you with the same outcome.
Yeah.
And then there's lots of other ingredients. Like if your toothpaste foams, it has a foaming agent. I mean, probably, as you know, with our toothpaste, like it's subtle. There's not really a foam. That's very different for some people because they're used to like the rabid foaming at the mouth.
Right.
That, you know, most, which by the way, was added to toothpaste in the 70s because of as a marketing gimmick to make people feel like it was cleaning their teeth better. So,
oh my gosh, that's so funny.
Yeah, it doesn't actually clean your teeth better. It's actually because your the membranes in your mouth, if anyone's sort of ever experienced sloughing of the interior cheeks, which is literally when like kind of the skin falls off. That is caused in a lot of cases by these very harsh things like foaming agents, which are effectively.
Wow.
And so you have very gentle membranes in your mouth that you have to treat gently in order to sort of protect them. So if it foams, a lot of natural companies sometimes will replace SLS, which is sort of the known detergent, with other things that, funny enough, actually have the same acronym, but it's like derived from coconuts. So it sounds more natural, but it's like, it's still a detergent. It still foams.
So SLS is like the foaming thing.
Sodium lauryl sulfate is like the common one found in more conventional toothpaste. So every conventional toothpaste has SLS because it definitely gives it the foaming. And then there's other things like anytime it says natural flavors, I mean, you probably know this. It's not natural. We looked into making, we had a lot of requests for like berry, watermelon flavored kids toothpaste. If it's any of those flavors, there's no natural way of putting that into a tube. There's not a watermelon essential oil. It doesn't exist. So you have to go to a flavor house and get that made. And they will never tell you what is inside of their formula because that's what's proprietary.
Right. Trade secret.
Yeah, exactly. So we steer clear of anything. If we don't know what's in it, we're not going to tell you to eat it. So we steer clear of that. And then there's lots of like more smaller things, but I mean, the craziest one is actually pretty impactful. It's called triclosan. Triclosan is still available in many conventional toothpaste. It's was originally thought of to prevent gingivitis, which is obviously essentially too much bad bacteria that causes gum disease. And it's a very strong antibacterial agent. It used to be found in hand soap as well because it killed bad germs. So it all makes sense. Okay, that's great. Yeah, kill everything in your mouth. But lo and behold, about 5-10 years ago, the FDA found out that triclosan was causing cancer in lab rats in different studies. So they banned it in hand soap. So you cannot find hand soap on the market with triclosan anymore, but you can find toothpaste.
Oh my gosh.
I actually have a hard time understanding the logic, although it was told to me that it was, you know, there's a strong argument that because of its protective powers against gingivitis that they should keep it in toothpaste.
Oh my gosh. Well, and for anyone listening, triclosan has also been found to greatly affect fertility, especially male fertility, sperm in particular. So, yeah, I mean, That's shocking. I'm so glad I'm talking to you because it's like I know certain things, but I don't know the dental world. I don't know the toothpaste world. And so that is crazy to me that they're still letting triclosan in there because it's very much known to be a fertility blocking chemical.
Yes, which is why they didn't want to let people wash their hands with it.
But let's wash our teeth with it.
And, exactly.
And there has to be some that's absorbed. Like you said, even if you spit out your toothpaste, I mean, you're putting it in your mouth. Everything is absorbable. That's so crazy.
It really is. And then like on the positive side, the other ingredient that is our sort of active ingredient star is xylitol, which it's harmful for pets, so they should not eat it. And I think there is some controversy of like humans eating too much of it. What I would say is there is a huge amount of studies that show its benefits in oral care.
Yeah.
So ours is actually naturally derived. But xylitol has this really cool feature in that. So when you have too much bad bacteria in your mouth, they essentially feed off of sugar. So if you're eating, you know, a high sugar diet or there's lots of sugar, you're not properly brushing your teeth, cavities can form. The xylitol, what it does, it actually appears like sugar. That's why it tastes sweet to us. And the bad bugs in your mouth go to eat it. And essentially they can't digest the xylitol. So it kills the bad bacteria.
Wow.
So it's a very targeted way of killing the stuff we don't want, because of course there are bad bacteria that exist everywhere in your body, but specifically in your mouth that are not good for your teeth. And without killing the good guys. And that's really the key. So back to sort of the things that we want to avoid in mouthwash. So we have mouthwash, floss, mints, toothpaste, and mouthwash, you find in most will contain alcohol, which, you know, the thinking, you know, back to the gingivitis discussion, like kill everything. We don't care. Good, bad, like kill
gotcha.
It all. And, you know, lo and behold, actually using alcohol and killing everything, which is really taking a scorched earth approach to oral care, is actually not good for your good bacteria. And try fostering a good gut microbiome when you kill everything in your mouth that is then making its way down into your stomach. So
Wow. That's
a big one to avoid. And it's something that we obviously avoid in our mouthwash because we're trying to work with your whole body and your body and making sure your oral health is functioning as best as possible. And, you know, you think it's sort of just the fluoride issue, but it's actually not just that piece of it, but there are other areas like floss is another one. Like most floss is made with Teflon. And actually one of the leading floss on the market was tested to be like a quarter of the materials comprised of Teflon. So we're not just talking like 0.00001%, but actually it's mostly Teflon. So having that wedged in between your gums is not something I would want to do twice
right.
a day. But yeah, so those are just a few of the things that I would look out for. And then I talk to the appetite, just making sure you're getting a high enough percentage of it.
Wow, that's so great. I know. I'm just like so disappointed in stores because I remember I was traveling and I don't remember even where I was, but I had to run into a Target to buy a toothpaste just to have something. And I was like, I literally, these are all crappy. so depressing that, you know, how hard is it for something like Risewell to get into a store like a Target or a Walmart or these grocery stores? Like why is it just that the other big companies have such a monopoly that there can't be good options? I mean, it's just so frustrating because unless someone knows about your company and orders online, they have really bad choices.
Well, we were available in almost 1,000 dental offices across the
country.
Okay,
that's
really
awesome.
Exciting. And so they actually carry our full-size products in their office.
Yay!
We're available at Erewhon, Credo, Fresh Market, and obviously our website. We're on Amazon now, which is something that took a while. But look, I get asked a lot why isn't everyone using hydroxyapatite? Because it's like if it's so great and it works so well and there's no safety issues, the short answer, and again, this isn't me trying to poke the industry at all, but it's more expensive. Fluoride is essentially given away for free because companies, it can't leach into the ground, it's hazardous, and so they have to properly dispose of it. And so to do that, they're largely giving it for free to toothpaste companies.
Oh my gosh.
So our toothpaste is $12 a tube, $10 on subscription, which I think is reasonable given the quality. But,
yeah,
you know, you can get toothpaste for $3, $4 in the city, maybe not that cheap. But, you know, you can certainly find toothpaste that's significantly cheaper than ours. And I think we would love for one day to be cheaper. But the truth is that when you think of your product like food and you treat every ingredient as really, I mean, crazy enough, our most expensive ingredient is vanilla extract in our kids' toothpaste.
I believe that.
Cake batter. When you use real vanilla extract, it's expensive.
Yeah.
So unfortunately, it's a bit of you get what you pay for. And again, that's why I'm not anti-fluoride, because I think for some populations, people, it could make sense. It's certainly a much more economical option. I think that when you're trying to create a tube of toothpaste that is really inexpensive, you have to make sacrifices and you have to do things to, you're not going to use vanilla extract, for instance. You'll use a natural flavor and be okay with that. And you'll use sort of stabilizers and other things to make the product consistent that are also like not great for you.
Yeah.
So I think that's really one of the big challenges. And I think there's a bit of an awareness piece too. I mean, for the targets of the world, I don't, you know, we'd love to be in sort of larger retailers at some point. And I think hydroxyapatite is becoming more, I think the good news is like, you know, through sort of our launch, more brands have picked up to it. And it's funny to see some of the natural toothpaste brands that have been around forever, like finally get on the bandwagon. And I'm like, you guys just realized your toothpaste literally did nothing for years.
Gosh.
And then they use like too little of it. But, you know, that's really the key difference between us, I'd say, and every other natural toothpaste brand is our DNA, we are a bunch of nerds. I mean, John is an engineer by background. My brother, the dentist, like we really care about the science piece of it. I mean, that's a big part of sort of our DNA and who we are. And we're not just trying to be like a pretty toothpaste brand. We want to be a toothpaste brand that really works and is like doing the best things for your teeth.
Oh, I love that. And I think one thing I really want people listening and just people in general, all of them, to understand is exactly that point that, you know, people will kind of bitch and complain about the price of things. And I totally understand that it comes from a privileged place to be able to like buy certain things. But at the end of the day, it's like, I would, you know, toothpaste, especially just like food and other things, you know, you do get what you pay for. And I think growing up, at least the way I was raised, it was sort of like you felt you were being tricked if you had to buy something more expensive, until I understood science behind things and quality and, you know, buying the bread that is in the discount section of the grocery store has consequences. You know, like there's a reason why that meat is 75% off right now, because it's literally going bad. And there's probably value to be had in buying the more expensive meat, you know. And I would have to like have these conversations with my parents and be like, you know, cheap is not always better, and you end up paying for it in the long run. And just flipping this idea of, you know, where can we pull back on other expenses? You know, I think people don't even balk at the idea of spending $6 on a coffee every day, mm-hmm. but they're like, oh, $10 for toothpaste that'll last me like a month. You know, it's just reorienting your priorities and knowing that you really are winning in the long run when you take the time to get higher quality items in your life. And I just love that you guys have created something that also is effective and that you're not wasting your money on something that doesn't work, because that sucks. And I didn't know that. I mean, before I learned about Risewell, I had no idea that there was a difference. And so I'm so glad that you're educating us. So,
well it can be, I think, overwhelming for, I mean, as you said this in the beginning, just I think one's journey from kind of living sort of a more conventional life, whether it be eating sort of personal care products, et cetera, and then making that switch, because it, especially now, like you go on Instagram and like it can be your carpets are now, it's like, oh, you have to have this kind of carpet, or your mattress that you sleep on, it has to be organic. And, and you know, I love that like there's awareness and there's all these great products coming out. But I think for most people, the most important thing that you can do for your health, your family's health, is food. Like number one, food. It's going into your body. It's medicine. Like think of it that way. And that's so critical. You know, slightly below that, because it is essentially food too, is oral care. Because everything that's going in your mouth that you're putting in there, whether it be, you know, your mouthwash, your floss, your toothpaste, like, it's being absorbed. I don't know if it's 30% or 40%. It's not 2%. It's a high percentage that's being absorbed every day by your body. And so you should think of it when you look at the ingredients, like, do I want to eat triclosan twice a day?
Right.
And if you don't, then you probably shouldn't be using it in your toothpaste.
Right.
And then beyond that, there's like all of these other, you know, what personal care products you use, but your skin's a decent barrier. It's not perfect. And of course, like, if you can use better things, do it. But in terms of priorities, like, one can be consumed, just let alone with the food piece of it, because that's really hard, especially with little ones.
Yeah.
Or sort of picky husbands like I have. and yeah, I think that, like, one has to kind of understand, like, what really moves the needle. And then the other stuff, like the organic mattress, like, maybe it matters, maybe it doesn't. But, you know, if one gets overwhelmed, it's just, let's, you know, start with sort of number one and then kind of move down the ladder.
I love that. Yeah, your mouth and your vagina are highly absorbable. So
definitely
prioritize those products, I would say. So to kind of circle back before we wrap up, you had shared about PCOS, going through IVF, becoming a mom. A lot of people listening to this are becoming a mom or are a mom. Can you just share with us what it was like, you know, obviously going through IVF? Do you just have one child, or you have more than
one? I have two now.
You have two. Okay. Did you do IVF with both? Were they both your embryos?
I did. But the second, I actually had a wonderful, amazing surgette with,
because
I had kind of a complicated birth with my first. I wasn't able to have my second, but it was cool to be on the other side of it. And I have a wonderful relationship with my surrogate. She's amazing in Texas. So she's gave us the greatest gift. So she's like his second mom.
Oh my gosh, I love that. I feel like I could have you on to have just a whole conversation about that. That's amazing. So what is it like now being a mom and running a company like Risewell?
Well, I think everything takes a team. So my ex-husband, John, he is running Risewell sort of day to day. My day job is actually, as I run a hedge fund in New York called Axon Capital. And that is what I primarily do. And then obviously Risewell is my passion, my third child, like, a lot goes into it. And then my brother, who's a dentist, is also very involved with the company, in addition to being a full-time dentist as well. So we all live really busy lives. I would say that one learning for me, I guess if there are two, I had this notion that, like, I had to have some kind of, like, perfect balanced life with everything kind of being kind of in sync and balanced. And my lesson to myself has been, many years ago, I quickly embraced realizing that I was never going to have balance, and actually that I don't even know that I would want balance. I actually kind of thrive with challenges and a bit of chaos and lots going on. So I think that's okay. So that's been something I've kind of made peace with. I think also embracing failure is something that was hard, as, like, someone who's a perfectionist and wanting everything to turn out perfectly. And starting a business, like, you have lots of learnings all the time. And if you aren't learning, honestly, it means you're doing something wrong. Like, we're not pushing ourselves enough. And so that's been sort of a new way of thinking. But I think lastly, sort of on your question, I think the idea too that for me, like, I have amazing help and people to support me. I've got, you know, an assistant who's my best friend and, like, keeps my life in order. And I have nannies that are incredible and act like, you know, a mom's to my children. So I think that I've also, you know, been able to embrace help and support, because it would be impossible for me to run a hedge fund, run a toothpaste company, be a great mom, be a great partner, you know, be a good friend to all my friends, and do that without lots and lots of help. And I'm actually not really perfect at any of those things, but always learning and trying to have a good time while I'm doing it.
Oh, I love that. Yeah. It takes a village. It's so hard. I feel like a lot of working moms who don't have help or adequate help think that that's normal, you know, and they burn the candle at both ends. They're dying. They're, like, really stressed out. And it's like, yeah, I've been in the same boat where you have to have the help. It makes all the difference. or it's like, it's hard to work. I mean, it's just, you can't do everything and you can't do it 100% all the time. I mean, we're not designed for that. So I love it. I love that you have that support. For anyone who is listening, who's maybe at different phases of your journey, maybe they have just found out that they're having issues with their hormones, or they're trying to conceive, or they're going through IVF, or maybe they're a working mom. Like, do you have any piece of advice for any of them, all of those phases, one of those phases, anything for that comes to mind? I know that's kind of a big question, but
yeah, it's tough because I think when you're in the thick of it, I mean, I remember sort of, you know, phase one before even having my first child, like I remember how hard it would be to see people so easily get pregnant and like they didn't have to do anything, or it was like an accidental pregnancy. It was like, oops, I didn't even want this pregnancy. And it was like things like that. I mean, it's hard not to, I mean, so for people sort of struggling, you know, without sort of having any children, I think there's not really great advice. I mean, you hope that things kind of work out the way they do. And like, obviously one's going to try everything possible to sort of make it happen. But it's, you know, I just giant hugs to those people, because I think it's hard. I mean, it's a really, it's hard to go through that and know what to say to people, because I don't think that there was anything that could have been said to me to make things easier. Because it's just, it's a hard process. And I feel lucky that I had sort of a great group of people around me, but also I think it's a lot more open now to talk about things. Like, I remember feeling a bit of shame attached with IVF, like it was this secret thing that I couldn't really talk about. And now it feels like it's something, I mean, my girlfriend the other day was talking to someone, sort of a stranger she just met, about her freezing her eggs and that process. And it was just this like open, I was like, wow, this is great. Like, we can now just like talk about these things. It's really open. Yeah. So that, I think that feels great. And, you know, I think everybody kind of has to figure out what works for them. I mean, I remember with my surrogacy journey, like my husband and I really wanted to keep that private for, you know, many months, because like there's just so much precariousness to the situation and how it's going to work. And that's kind of what worked for us. And we just, you know, everybody has to do, I think, what works for them, because like all of these things are really, really challenging. And in, you know, my sort of the last case, when like I wanted to be really patient and try to get my period back naturally, like that was also kind of its own journey, because it wasn't a quick fix. And right. A lot of times I was like, I should just go back on metformin. Like, this is not working. There's just a bit of, I think probably the overarching thing is having patience with yourself and others, and finding the right people to kind of bring in at times that make sense.
I love that. Oh my gosh. So good. I know. I totally feel you on the shame around IVF. That was a really hard one for me, especially coming from the natural health space. Mm-hmm. I remember like when we were going through our infertility journey, just the thought of having to do IVF made me just shut down. I was like, that can't even be an option. Like, I literally went to school to help people not have to do that. I mean, like, how could this be happening to me that I have to go through the most conventional option to have a child, which should be something that's so natural, you know? And so I totally get that. But I think, just like you said earlier about your journey, and for me, I feel like in the thick of it, it feels so hard. Like you said, there's really not much that you can say. The most validating thing that anyone ever said to me was like, this sucks. Like, it sucks that you have to go through this. Like, that's the best thing you can tell someone. Like, this is shitty. Because, you know, all of the like, it's going to be okay, it's all going to work out, like everything happens for a reason. These things that are so well intentioned, and even stuff I've said myself to someone who's struggling with something, it's so invalidating. Mm-hmm. Because what is real and what is true is that what they're going through sucks.
It sucks, really, and hard. It also might not be okay.
Yeah,
and I think exactly. That's the hard thing too. Is like, you don't, you hope that looking back on any challenge in life, and this is sort of fertility and infertility and beyond, like that you find, like, I always have these great stories of my greatest challenges to explain to myself why they happen and why I'm better for them happening. But that doesn't take away the pain in the moment.
Yeah.
And the fact that like, you might not have the outcome that you wanted to have. Yeah. And like, that's Yeah, that does. That just sucks.
It just sucks. Yeah.
Yeah. And you can't tell someone like, oh, it's going to be okay. Cause like it might not be okay and it might not be what they wanted. But you know, it is what it is. And it doesn't take away the fact that it's a really terrible situation.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that it's interesting because I think with fertility struggles, it's such a unique experience because it's a grief like you lost someone. This was my experience. It's a grief like you lost someone in a culture that doesn't understand that at all. You know, it's like a grief of a future thing. There's anxiety of like what is to come. There's this like mourning, this loss of like what's happening. And the experience, at least for me, that you go through are sort of like the stages of grief. Yet if someone actually dies in your family, everyone sort of gets that and they treat you a little differently. It's just, you know, like if someone dies, they're not just gonna be like, it's okay. Everything happens for a reason. Like you don't go up to someone who's like, grandma just died and say that to them.
Yeah.
You know, you like hold them and you're like, this is so sad. Like, I'm so sorry. And with fertility, but it's not this like defined moment either of, you know, cause there is potential hope. it's really complicated. And, you know, and I think back around IVF and like the shame that I had around IVF, yet we literally could not be parents together without it. If my husband and I were born at any other decade, we wouldn't be able to have children.
Yeah.
And so I'm so grateful for IVF, you know, even though that wasn't how I wanted it to go down. And like, thank goodness, because if there wasn't that there, I wouldn't ever have had my happy ending. I would have been that couple that's like, it'll work out, and it wouldn't have, you know?
Yeah.
I think about that all the time of just like, we would be that couple, that like childless couple who wanted a child so bad and just was like brokenhearted their whole life, because without that medical intervention based on my husband's sperm situation, we would have never conceived. And I like sometimes forget that because we do have our child and I'm pregnant again. It's really wild. So it's like it is this like marrying of, you know, scientific advances, the conventional side of things, the natural side of things, how they all marry together, this like really complex interwoven piecing it all apart. It's, yeah, it's crazy.
But it's really cool to have to like make – to create an embryo through that process and to – and then potentially have like many embryos just sitting – I mean, I think about like all my embryos that are just like sitting on ice like waiting – to be turned into little humans. I mean, it's like incredible, incredible process.
It is. Oh my gosh. Well, thank you so much for sharing. I feel like I could interview you about 1,000 different things. We could just like keep going. Maybe I'll have to have you on again to talk about like your actual like experience of pregnancy and birth and like the surrogacy, because that's so fascinating to me. But thank you so much for sharing. And I feel like I learned so much about toothpaste. I'm so stoked. My daughter loves your toothpaste. She's so funny. We brush her teeth and she sucks it up and then is like, more paste, please. And I'm just like, oh my gosh. Like she just wants the paste part. And I'm like, you have to actually brush. Like we're working on it.
I have the same challenge with my sons. They're both, they just want to eat the toothpaste, which is great. It's very flattering.
I know. It is. It is. It's like, but we have to actually like brush your teeth. That's so sweet. But I just love it. You had that experience so that you created a company like this so that we have good products, because without people like you, it wouldn't exist. And so thank you for that.
Oh, thank you so much. And thank you so much for having me. This is an awesome conversation.
Yeah, of course. For anyone listening who's like wanting to try Risewell, where do they go? How do they get connected with you? Like, tell us.
Our Instagram is Risewell Co. You can find us at risewell.com. Like I said, you can also find us on Amazon, Erewhon, Credo, Nordstrom's, Fresh Market, and hopefully your local dentist office as well.
Amazing. Go advocate to your dentist to have them switch to Risewell.
Exactly. That would be helpful.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Corey. It's been such a pleasure.
It has. Thank you.
Before you go, there's one last thing. Did you know that we have a swag store now? The Healthy as a Mother store, where we sell amazing merchandise that is fun to wear. We have shirts and hats and sweatshirts. We have drinkware, bags, journals, all of the things that are healthy as a mother or related to motherhood in general.
We would love if you could support our podcast by checking out our store. We love doing what we do, and it's really helpful to get the support and also to spread the word and share our amazing brand with the world. And you get some really cool, awesome stuff. One of my favorites is the crop sweatshirt and one of our glasses that we sell that says Healthy as a Mother. I just think it's so great. So head to www.healthyasamother.com/store to check out what we have. Again, that is healthyasamother.com/store. And we are absolutely open to feedback. If there's something you would like to see that is not at the store, we can make a lot of different things there. So head over there, check it out, and we would love to see you sporting some Healthy as a Mother gear. And if you take a picture of yourself on Instagram, definitely tag Dr. Morgan and I, and we will be sure to share. Again, that is healthyasamother.com/store to check out our merchandise.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Healthy as a Mother podcast. In order for others to hear this information, please leave a review with Apple Podcasts, subscribe, and send to a friend who could benefit from this content. We're so excited to share more on becoming and being a mother next time.
And please remember that the ideas and views of this podcast are for informational purposes only and are not intended to serve as a substitute for medical care of any kind, including the diagnosis or treatment of any illness or disease. Consult with your provider before integrating this information into your own care plan. And remember, a healthier future starts now, and it starts with you.